What's up, heroes? Welcome to episode 4 of the Producer Life podcast. This is the House Ninja, and I sincerely appreciate you being here with me. This is part 2 of the interview with Lauren Hardy, an Orlando-based DJ and promoter who built an amazing weekly mini-festival that draws hundreds of bass heads and attracts both regional and national-level DJs such as Ill Gates, Janston, and Caspa. Please go back and listen to episode 3 before jumping in here. In this interview, you'll get some more ideas about how you can create your own music scene of passionate followers.
Now we're up to over 300 on a Monday night, which was last night. And I'm honestly still kind of reeling from it. It's hard to sleep after a night like that, you know?
Before I get started with the interview, I wanted to give a big shout out to Aruj Agarwal, the founder of Feedspot.com. He recently listed the HouseNinjaMusic.com blog, which includes his podcast, as one of the top 25 music production blogs on the planet. While I'm only at spot 21, I'm absolutely honored to be included in the same list as EDM Prod, Hyperbits, Point Blank, Pyramind, and Warp Academy. If you'd like to see the whole list, I'll link it in the show notes. Now roll the intro music.
This is the Producer Life Podcast with your host, the House Ninja. Bringing you actionable ideas to improve your music and get it heard.
No, like basically like I've been meeting all these people through all of my travels and I've, you know, all the lighting directors and the stage managers and the audio techs and all this stuff. And just like from being around, going to all the bass shows that were happening here, you know, and one of my good buddies, Jordan Zamore, who is a phenomenal lighting director, was in good with the owners of the club, introduced me. I told him, you know, what I'm doing and they were about it. They were like, well, you know, do it. Here you go. You know, let us know what you need. And we ran with it.
Okay.
And it was good.
Okay, good. So in-person networking in this case, it was people you Absolutely. Knew because you were showing up and being present on the scene.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not yet, you gotta have enough balls to go and like talk to people, you know, like that's someone that's become one of my best friends. I don't know if I'm supposed to name him on here. I guess I won't. He's literally the biggest promoter in all of Central Florida. Throws some of the biggest shows, has been responsible for literally the biggest shows coming here. When I first decided to start this, I was listening to what a lot of people around me were telling me. And once his name was uttered by 3 completely unrelated people, I felt like I needed to go and have a conversation with them. So I called him up. I found him on Facebook. I sent him a message like, hey, I'd like to come and sit down with you and have a conversation with you. And I walked in. I walked into his office, looked him in his eye, introduced myself to him, told him, you know, who I am and what I'm doing, and asked for any insights. Invited him to come out to the show and, you know, experience it for himself. This was back when I was at the spot, and he's been an unending source of information to help me make the best decisions that I can make, and to be a sounding board for ideas and stuff. And he's got so much experience. He'll tell me why things won't work, which is sometimes the best thing that you can hear, at least that I can hear, so that I can try to find the reasons why it will and overcome those deficiencies, turn them into strengths. That's half the reason why I'm still here.
Would it be fair to call him a mentor? I mean, is that kind of the relationship?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would absolutely call him a mentor and one of my best friends.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. So you've moved on to the back room of a bottle club. And then was it to Hinau after that?
No, after I left here, we moved for a few weeks to another club downtown that does more hip hop type stuff. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought that it was going to be a good fit, but it just wasn't a good fit. So one of my girlfriend's friends who came on board my team before he went on his journey, had found a place called the Geek Easy at Winter Park across the street from Full Sail.
Yep. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. Really, really cool, cool place. Something a little different from the norm. And, I threw my first national, touring headlining show, which was Janston on March 18th, of 2018. That was our 1 year anniversary. And it was one of the biggest shows to date. That I had thrown.
Nice.
And I'm really thankful to have had the opportunity to have been there. We went almost a year down there And then I went and met with the owner of the Hanau Center. I'd seen a couple of shows. I'd been to a couple of shows there, and I really loved the venue, and the fact that there was like an indoor and an outdoor space that we could capitalize on. And I'm a tech guy, so I was able to kind of, you know, work with Jose, the owner over there, to make some modifications that have benefited a lot of shows that have come through there, which is cool. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time there. And then I'd gotten to this point, you know, after a couple of years, couple of personal problems, where I was kind of burnt out a little bit. And I just kind of stopped for about a month and a half or so, you know, because we were running weekly for a long time. And I just needed to kind of take a break for a minute, because it's a lot of work, you know, to be the stage manager, the talent scout, the graphic designer, all of it, every hat I'm wearing, with the exception of very few. I was just kind of overwhelmed and burnt. So
yeah,
took a step back and just went out to a couple of shows and supported my people that had come up with me, that I had given, some of which that are, you know, their first shot ever playing outside of their living room was with me. Some of which are even touring now, which is pretty cool.
It is.
And guilt, you know, through my mentor, was made aware of me, and they reached out and they were like, "Hey, you know, we're thinking about starting a new night. What do you think about this?" And I said, "I think that I'm down for the challenge. Let's ride it." We didn't know if it was going to be a Monday or Tuesday. I mean, honestly, I don't think there's that much of a difference between the two. And I was like, you know, if you're willing to welcome me into this amazing room, I'm going to give you absolutely everything that I got. And that was about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And
now you're up to 300 on a Monday night.
Now we're up to over 300 on a Monday night, which was last night. And I'm honestly still kind of reeling from it. Yeah. It's hard to sleep after a night like that, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. I saw your post on Facebook about that. So networking, find a mentor. You got a lot of experience going to festivals. You kind of had a sense of what you wanted. What was the biggest obstacle you had to overcome being a promoter and growing Bass Night, and how did you get over it?
I mean, it's kind of you kind of got to put on blinders, right? Like, at the risk of sounding like a dick, like I'm very genre specific. There's been this debate, people trying to get me to bring a broader spectrum of genres in, you know, like house music and things of this nature, mm-hmm. Which I just don't feel it doesn't match. Like it's not a logical component. And I've gotten a bit of backlash for my stance on that, especially at my show. But like, I've had to stay true to what my vision is, right? If it's not authentic, how could I really push it? Because I don't really feel like the reason why, like we were talking about earlier, the comments that people are saying about me as a person and, you know, and Bass Night, because, man, this is all personal. Like Bass Night is basically like an extension of me. And it's like a lot of times when you're an artist of any kind, you know, people are going to have their opinions, mm-hmm. and they're going to try to impress them upon you and tell you why you can't do this. You know, like they said that I can't, there's no way I could be a DJ and run and a promoter. I don't really consider myself a promoter, right? Like a promoter is the guy that's just always trying to sell tickets, whatever. I'm not exactly sure what to call myself, but I don't really call myself a promoter.
Your Facebook page says chief executive officer.
Yeah. I think that's more, I mean, I think more so. It's just like, I don't want to micromanage the artists, you know, like I'm not going to tell them how to do what they do or what vibe they should bring. I just find the right artists that bring the vibes that I want to have and arrange it all in a fashion that's logical to me. And that I believe, you know, over 300 people showing up on a Monday night is testament that it's logical to them too. Like it makes sense, even though they might not be aware that it makes sense. They just know that it feels good. Right. I was just saying, like, it's don't dilute yourself because of what other people tell you. Like if you're rusty or your skills are lacking, you can always get more skills, but stay true to who and what you are. Like regardless of the hate you're going to get, you know, your family is going to tell you that there's no future in this, or why are you wasting your time or whatever. don't fucking listen to him. You know, like any, like there's nothing that's guaranteed for any of us. Like the only thing that I can guarantee you is that if you never try, you're guaranteed that you're never going to win.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like that's like indomitable will from back in the video game, RPG games. Indomitable will is something you got to have. You got to have, you know, stay true.
Are you an old school D&D gamer?
From way, way, way back in the day, like a long time ago. I might still have some of my dice collection somewhere in a box.
It's making a resurgence.
As it should.
Yeah.
We need that. We need people to be using their imaginations instead of looking at the flat, they're not boxes anymore, but these flat screens hanging on their walls, getting their information and their ideas and ideals from. We need to shut that shit off and use our imaginations and interact with people that are sitting in front of us. You know, I think it's, there's a reason behind all of that. We need it.
I feel like your vision for Base Night and the fact that you have kept it, you know, very genre specific. In the entrepreneurial space, there's this idea of the riches are in the niches. You know, you niche down to a particular market, and you know everybody is doing salsa night and they're doing house night, and you know, but there wasn't. You're serving an underserved market. There was no base scene. People thought it was a fishing scene you were pitching initially. So, you know, you're serving an underserved market. And so if you dilute that, then you lose what Base Night is.
I mean, ultimately, I have to agree with you. You know, the thing about my base people is that we're not really necessarily heavy drinkers. So it's not always, it's not a priority of most clubs to welcome this type of thing to happen there. Because, like, let's be honest here, and I never even thought about it because I never frequented clubs when I was younger. The whole purpose of a club being there is for people to buy alcohol and to try to get laid, right? Like that's why they exist. So if they're not going to be buying a bunch of alcohol, why would we have them there? And I think that it just comes down to finding the right venues that can support something greater than just that individual purpose. And I've been very fortunate that the venues that I've been at up to this point have welcomed us. You know, I'm still taken aback. Like I'm shocked that I can tell you, like, Base Night's home right now is at Gilt in Orlando. It used to be Roxy. I mean, that's like an icon. Yeah. So for me to call that home, for me to be sitting at the staff meetings and seeing how an operation like that works, it's just amazing to me. I consider myself extremely lucky. Like blessed probably doesn't even touch it. How I feel, like, very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in. And it's not that it was easy, but it was sure as shit worth it. You know?
Yeah. Can you offer any advice for working with management of clubs as you're trying to promote a particular night? What have you found that's worked well?
What I think is like whenever you're dealing in any type of a partnership type situation, like you have to bring something yourself to the table, right? Something. I'm not going to tell you what it has to be, but something. And you also have to look at it from your partner's perspective. You know, like how are they going to benefit from this, like long term? And then have good, clear communication. Like if something feels right, if something doesn't feel right, like have enough balls to like actually address it. You know, it's a relationship, and it's not always going to be nights of over 300. Believe me, you know, I brought an act in. We paid a good amount of money for to have 126 people come in through the door, you know, which was one of our worst nights, which cost us some, you know, the highest amount. So I think it's just, again, like I'm really passionate about this. And so like I have to check myself a little bit because I do get loud and sometimes abrasive. I mean, I spent 10 years in call center work, selling vacation packages, you know, and it kind of made me into a pile driver in negotiations and in communications. And I sometimes forget that I'm over 6 feet tall, over 200 pounds and have a booming voice. So, you know, you got to look at how you look from the other side of the table and try to find ways that you can both achieve your individual objectives while coming together, you know, to do something greater for everyone that's involved.
Okay. That sounds like great.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. To be a little cliche, it's kind of thinking win-win, looking for something that both of you guys
have to. Yeah, absolutely. And then if you see that there's going to be an obstacle that's going to present itself, as soon as you're aware of it, you got to talk about it. That way you can strategize together. You know, like there's things like, things that I would have never thought of, you know, like incentives that I can offer my promoters, you know, like whether it be like a table in VIP and a bottle of something if you can bring in X amount of people, which is awesome. You know, like I would have never thought to offer that if the club didn't tell me that it was even a possibility. And things like that are big motivators for people, you know, to get involved.
Yeah.
That's the other key, right? Like one of the other reasons why this is still going and why it's growing like this is because it's not really just me. It's like every single person that comes here is going to go and tell someone. They're all promoting it. Everyone's involved. Everyone has a smile on their face, even at 2:30 in the morning. You know what I mean? Like they feel like they have been actuated. They're involved, like they're active, and it's something that they can have ownership of. Yeah, like I'm at the helm, but this is all of our ship, because without everyone showing up and doing what they do, what is it really?
Let me come back to a comment you made a few minutes ago. You said people were telling you it wasn't possible to be both a promoter and a DJ at the same time. That was too much. And can we pivot a little bit and talk a little bit about your DJ persona, BTU, and how that came about and what you do there?
I mean, absolutely. And thanks for asking the question. Back at Incendia, during that sunrise set, I mean, in the whole thing with Incendia, if I can talk about them for just briefly, they have these huge geodesic domes that have fire sculptures built into them and sometimes fire cannons on top of them. They have, like, around their DJ booth are these fire artwork. It's all fire, right?
I don't want to know what their insurance bill looks like.
Yeah, for real. Or the amount that they pay for their gas for an art installation. I'm sure that it's significant. But, you know, when I was thinking about creating Bass Night and I'm surrounded by heat and it's all this fire and everyone's talking about their tracks, they're like, dude, you got to check this shit out. It's a heater. Or, man, this track is fire. And I'm thinking, it's like, what is that? Like, I was having a conversation with someone and we were talking about units of measuring heat and BTUs. You know, it's like, stands for British Thermal Unit. Mm-hmm. It's a unit of measuring heat, right? Because all the tracks that I bring are fire, burn the universe with fresh, filthy bass. That's how I got my name, why I call myself BTU. You know what I mean? People were thinking that burn the universe was something negative, but in all reality, it's something really, it's just a different way to say something really fucking cool.
Yeah, that's a whole lot catchier than like, you know, check this shit out. So I'm going to be DJ Poop. You know, that just doesn't have the same ring. You know?
No, it's BTU because I was born at Incendia.
Okay.
And all my tracks that you will hear from me, if you've been to the show, you know, it's all fire.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tons of energy.
Absolutely.
So we talked a little bit about DJing. How did you learn to DJ? Where did that come from? Were you self-taught? Did you again find?
I taught myself.
Okay.
I taught myself. I've taught myself all my instruments. I'm not saying that I have not absorbed a lot of amazing techniques from some phenomenal performers. There's one guy. He goes by Serious George. He's a part of Dub Day. I was lucky enough to have spent the better part of an entire day in my living room. With my controller at the time, I have CDJs now, but with my controller at the time to watch him do what he does. And like, and I'm on the record here for, you know, forever and ever immortalized on your podcast. Like he took me from like a level 40 DJ after spending like 3 to 5 hours a day, every day for 2 years mixing, you know, instead of fucking off doing anything else. That's what I was focusing on. He took me to like level 80 in a day. Like some of the tactics and techniques and the way that he looks at the control surfaces themselves are just extraordinary. And I kind of absorbed a little piece of him. And I kind of absorb pieces from all the artists that have come through, because like, I'll watch what they do, you know? Like, I believe you're part of Producer Dojo, right?
I am.
Yeah, so I had Ill Gates come through, and I got to sit and speak with him, you know, a little bit about what he does. And then more importantly, I got to watch what he does, you know, like the integration of three CDJs, and it wasn't an Ableton rig. It was an MPC Live that he brought out and plugged in to add additional elements into his set. Look, that leveled me up too. You know what I mean? It's just like all this information is floating around like by example. So you can kind of absorb it. It's like these producers, I mean, they're live streaming. Like if you're paying attention, like you can really learn a lot of shit just real time. You know what I mean? Don't a couple few hundred sets in front of people. You don't really get too nervous anymore. It just feels more comfortable. And it's just like a way for me to just be like, hey guys, so I've been doing some digging and I found some shit I think you're really going to dig. And I'm feeling like this today. So let me share this with you, which is what I got to do last night. And it was fucking awesome, man. They were feeling it. I love it.
That is phenomenal. And you're starting to dip your toes into the producer scene. I understand you're working with Ableton now. And
yeah, I'm working with Ableton. I mean, back in the day, like, okay, so when CDJs first came out, just to elaborate on the previous question for a second, mm-hmm. the CDJ 100, I was working in digital imaging and I was working a trade show for the Photo Marketing Association. Pioneer had a booth set up with the very first gen CDJs, and I kind of got lost in that years and years ago. And so I was kind of familiar with the idea of it, right? Like, I mean, I had record players and stuff like that, but I didn't really mix on them. So, I've been digital. As far as getting into production side of things, back in the very beginning, before Ableton, there was a program called MTV Beat Generator on, I think it was PlayStation or something, where you could take loops and stack them into tracks. And before Fruity Loops actually came out, mm-hmm. there was a program called Acid.
Yeah.
Acid 3.0. And a couple of friends and myself spent roughly 9 months in Acid 3.0 to create a total of 60 minutes worth of audio. And that computer had long since died a long time ago. And I burned one, I found one old CD at the bottom of a bin in an old CD case that wasn't even labeled. Luckily, I was able to recover some of my tracks, which I now have on my USB, and I'll play them every great once in a while. But now, yeah, I mean, this was well before dubstep, but you're still going to hear a lot of the same features. Like I'm really into classical instruments like woodwinds or brass or strings, stuff like that, or like different world instruments like mandolins or sitars or things like that that you're going to hear in the tracks that will be coming out next year. I'm just at a place where I'm starting to feel much more confident in Ableton, in the workflow process, to where, you know, I do have a bunch of project files that are in the works, but nothing is up to my level of standard to where I'm ready to present it to you guys soon, though.
Well, when you get ready, let me know and we'll have you back on the podcast.
I would love that.
Where can people go to find more about Bass Night Orlando and about BTU?
All socials for Bass Night, it's Bass Night ORL. For Instagram, we're on pretty much all of them. For BTU, I do have a SoundCloud page, which I've been neglecting terribly, Burn the Universe. You can expect a couple of fresh mixes to drop sometime in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Because I've, like I said, I've neglected. I think it's been like a year and a half since I dropped a mix. And man, I got some amazing shit coming for you guys.
Okay, fantastic. We'll look forward to it. And I can't thank you enough for your time tonight.
Thank you for having me on. This has been a really cool experience.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Lauren.
All right, bud. We'll see you hopefully next Monday.
Thanks so much for joining me. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. I'd love to give your review a shout out on a future episode. This is the House Ninja, reminding you to be someone's hero today.